Well, thank you very much for the welcome. It's really good to be with you. It's a fantastic schedule that you've got. It has me down, starting my talk at 7:30, and it doesn't give me an end time, which is brilliant. So I can just speak as long as I like. So it's a very good schedule. But I'd just like to start by saying I really appreciate the work that you do. It's so important. And you are really on the front line, as Roger was saying. It's a great spiritual battle, and I'll be talking about that quite a lot in my talk tonight, the spiritual battle of evangelism. What Satan would love to do is to put a big bomb underneath this room. That's what he would love to do, but of course he can't because God is in control. But I will be referring to that spiritual battle. I want to encourage you this evening, particularly from personal experiences and a project that I've been working on the last 5 years. But I just start with some thoughts from Psalm 18. King David was very open about his trials in life. When you read through the Psalms, he wasn't just open, he was very graphic. He used very graphic language to express the agony that he had. He had serious illnesses, physical illnesses, mental illnesses. People wanted to kill him. And he was also in anguish about ungodliness. And yet, even though he had these great trials, David had great confidence in God. It's really nice to see this on your list of things, starting with confidence in God. That is so important in the work that you do. In fact, it's important always for Christians. But it's remarkable that he had such confidence despite those big trials that he had. And when you read through the Psalms, you see this certain language: the Lord is my rock, he is my fortress and my deliverer. David had great trust and confidence in God. So that raises a question: why was David so confident in God despite all the trials that he had? What was the secret to that confidence? What can we learn and imitate from what David did? Well, one of the things he did, we see in Psalm 18. He could see that God's way was perfect. You get to verse 30 and he says, "As for God, his way is perfect." And because his way is perfect, even though we are imperfect in every sense, then in verse 32 he says, "And makes my way perfect." He could be confident that God had a perfect plan for him because God is perfect. And it's so easy to forget that. And when you read through the Psalms, you keep seeing this theme that David had a vision of God's perfection. And it's important to have that. In Psalm 19, the law of the Lord is perfect. It's perfect, converting the soul. God has perfect forgiveness. "Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow." That's perfect forgiveness. The Lord is perfectly righteous. Everything God has ever done, everything Jesus ever did, was perfectly righteous. Every judgment God has ever made has been perfect. Everything about God is perfect. Salvation is perfect. That lovely Psalm 149 verse 4, "He will beautify, perfect his people with salvation." Everything about God is perfect. And when you understand that, you can then have confidence in salvation. And this is important to explain to the unbeliever, that they can be saved. God is a perfect God who gives perfect salvation. In the Psalms, we read of the perfection of heaven. It's not just beautiful, it's the perfection of beauty. Beauty is an important word in God's kingdom. Perfection is an important concept in God's kingdom. So why is it so important? It's important for individual believers. In the book of Job, we read that in this life we will have trials. Man is born to trouble as the sparks fly upward. I've known trials in my life. One of the trials we had, our eldest daughter on her 15th birthday, she had to have a brain operation to save her life, and it was right on her birthday. And that operation didn't go perfectly well, so she needed another two operations. And so that's the kind of trial where it's not easy to have confidence in God. But we can have confidence in God if we know his perfection and his perfect way. It was even harder for our eldest daughter. She's been a Christian since a young age, and yet she showed remarkable trust in God, despite in some ways not even having a childhood. But her trust in God got her through those trials. The devil wanted Job to doubt God's goodness, and the devil will tempt us to forget that God is perfect. And in evangelism, it's important that we declare God's perfection to this world. One generation shall praise your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts. So it's important to have this vision that God is perfect in all his ways. I'll just come back to this theme of spiritual battle. As was mentioned in the introduction, I've been quite public with my faith, belief in intelligent design, belief in biblical creation. And I'll just give you a couple of examples of some of the trials. I was once in the coffee room and my colleague was opposite me. He was reading the front page of the Times. Or actually, he then read inside and I could see the front page. And I noticed the first title was Intelligent Design Creeps Onto Courses. And I said to my colleague, who wasn't a Christian, I think someone must be in trouble. And he said, yes, and it's you, because your name is on the inside. This major article says you are creeping intelligent design onto courses. And I said, well, that's news to me. I didn't realize, I hardly say anything about intelligent design. And then a few weeks later, there was another article in the Telegraph, how Genesis crept back into the classroom. And it had these two extremes. Richard Dawkins is one extreme. They call him, you can see there, a pin-up boy for atheism. And I was the pin-up boy for creation. I'd never been a pin-up boy before. But this was the first time I was kind of mentioned in the national press. But after this happened, in particular in 2006, there were many atheist organizations, sometimes not declaring themselves as an atheist organization. They would write to my university and say, you should demote Burgess or sack him, or at least stop him from associating Bristol University with science supporting creation. During 2006, there was at least once a month someone would write to my boss, the vice chancellor, and it was sometimes very embarrassing, sometimes very awkward. Although looking back, I realise that the vice chancellor and some senior academics in my university were learning quite a lot about biblical creation, because people were telling them what I believed. And so I didn't need to witness to the people, but it was very awkward. And some of the emails were really, some were quite threatening, some were quite nasty. This is when I really learnt there is a spiritual battle, and the devil does not like biblical creation. The devil wants people to have an excuse. Romans 1:20 tells us we do not have an excuse to reject the idea of a creator. But the devil hates that, and he's doing a lot today to try to give people an excuse. I want to now change. Now I'm going to give you an example of the spiritual battle in creation evangelism. But as you will see, it's very much connected with what I spoke about in Psalm 18, so it's very much connected. And I'm also going to tell you about a revelation that I've recently had. Now, when I tell you my revelation, some of you will say to me, Stuart, that is blindingly obvious. That's not a revelation. If you'd asked me, I could have just told you that. But when it comes to that point, I will then explain an excuse as to why I didn't have that common sense. Anyway, I'm going to tell you about a revelation. It'll come a bit. It's a bit of a long story. So the last 5 years since the beginning of 2021, 5 years I've been slogging away writing a book with an American publisher from Seattle, Discovery Institute. And they said, we want you to write a book, Advanced Engineering in the Human Body, to show that that verse in Psalm 139, verse 14, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, to show that verse is correct. Now, obviously, people have had these kind of books before. In fact, I've written a book about it before. But they said, we want you to bring the absolute latest scientific evidence. You've been editor of bioengineering journals. We want you to give the very latest evidence. So they said one aim is to show how evidence supports creation. We want you to give hundreds of examples of superior design in the human body. We also want you to expose the false science of Richard Dawkins, Lentz and Hafer, because as I will explain, there are lots of books being given to students telling them the Bible is wrong, science shows the human body is badly designed. It's a real spiritual battle at the moment. If you speak to students, many students are seeing this, as I shall explain. So this was the motivation for the book. Then, interestingly, the third aim is to show, well, it's actually not about the evidence. It's all about world views. It's not a technical argument. It's a worldview argument. So you might say, well, what's the point of showing how evidence supports creation? Well, you kind of have to do that to answer all the objections. But having presented the overwhelming evidence for creation in the human body, you then have to explain that it all comes down to a battle of world views. The challenge we have is that Richard Dawkins denies that he has an agenda. He denies that he has a worldview. He claims he's just correct and that science supports him. But this is the challenge we have. I will say that I have an agenda, a worldview, but these atheists, they deny that they have a worldview. So as I said, naturalistic science claims that you have an excuse not to believe in God. The world just made itself. We just evolved from apes. And I'll give you an example of some of these books. Lots of books are coming out in America. It's a book widely distributed amongst students. And in fact, I've got the book here by Abby Hafer. And just to give you one quote in the book, she says, if we were designed, why did the creator design the throat so badly? And all through this book, she's very sarcastic about God. How can you believe in a God given that we are such a bad design? She has a degree from Oxford University. She says, I'm a qualified biologist and I can tell you we are designed badly from head to foot. She hates Psalm 139, verse 14, and she wants to tell students, don't believe the Bible. But she doesn't explain her agenda. She just says science proves the Bible wrong. So that's one. There's another book widely read, particularly in America, but it's coming across to Europe now, by Nathan Lentz. And he says the human body has hundreds of design flaws from head to toe were badly designed. He says the wrist, the hands, the feet are the most obnoxious examples of bones for which we have no use. It's interesting that he focuses on hands and feet because they are the two things that set us apart, make us creative. They're the two parts of the body of the Lord Jesus that were nailed to the cross. He healed people with his hands. And yet, this author is claiming that our hands and feet are not just badly designed, but terrible design. He hates the idea of biblical creation. And Richard Dawkins, in one of his books, he says the eye is the design of a complete idiot. And millions of people have read his comments, and a lot of his book is dedicated to saying the human body is badly designed. It is an attack on biblical creation, particularly the design. They focus on the design of man. There is a great spiritual battle. I want to go very briefly through 10 parts of the human body, just to give you a snapshot of this book that I'm writing. I won't dwell on, I'd love to give you an hour lecture on each thing. In my book, I actually have 15 chapters, 15 parts of the human body. I'm an expert in biomechanics, so that's what I tend to focus on. But I just go through, because my main point is I want to tell you what science actually says about the different parts of the body and what science experts say. So first of all, the foot. Did you know your feet are the most beautiful part of your body? When you put your socks on in the morning, you should remember they're the most beautiful part of your body for two reasons. The first, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel. Secondly, the feet and the hands are the pinnacle of mechanical design in the entire universe. I've worked on some famous projects, the Hubble Space Telescope, Skylark rocket, Olympic bicycles. Nothing begins to compare with the engineering of the feet and the hands. They are two very special parts of the body. Just to give you a glimpse of that, if you look at a prosthetic foot or a robot foot, if you look carefully at robot feet, they're flat. They have one or two joints, normally one joint. The human foot has 33 joints. It's an arched foot. Robots are pathetic. Humanoid robots are pathetic compared to the human body. We often read how great AI is and how great robots are, but they are not great compared to the human body. And so in my book, I say the foot is superior engineering. There's human advanced engineering, but the foot is superior engineering, because the publisher said, Stuart, you've reviewed many designs of spacecraft, bicycles, so do a review of the human body and show how each part of the human body is superior. And so, yeah, chapter one, I do that. So then I go on to the wrist. Oops, sorry. I should just mention this quotation at the bottom. One of the leading medical books on the foot says this: the foot is superbly constructed for ambulation. So the point I want to make here is you have Nathan Lentz, a professor of biology in the United States. He says the foot is a terrible design, but he hasn't actually ever done research on the foot. If you speak to someone who has done research on the foot, actually I've published quite a few papers, so I could have quoted myself, but if I quote someone else, the foot is superbly constructed for ambulation. And so Nathan Lentz is pushing false science to students. It's science versus evolution. Ironically, creationists are accused of being pseudoscience. The reality is evolution is pseudoscience, and I'm very blunt in my book, and I'm very blunt about exposing Richard Dawkins, Nathan Lentz, and I say, this is what they're saying, and it's false science. Beware of false science. So then I go on to the wrist, and the wrist is amazing. Your two lower bones in your arm, the radius and ulna, they form a four-bar mechanism that crosses over. It's the most incredible, ingenious design. No robot, no prosthetic hand or wrist can emulate the human body. Again, it's far superior engineering. So again, in my book, I say this is superior engineering. Actually, I will quote myself now. Last year, I published a paper in a top journal, Biomimetics, in 2024, and I said in that paper, it is remarkable how the eight wrist bones can perform four major functions. And at the end of that paper, I was allowed to say the incredible design of the wrist joint is a challenge to the theory of evolution. They let me write that in a secular journal. So sometimes you can actually make some statements. So again, I said the wrist is superior engineering. In each chapter, I often mention parts of spacecraft and rockets, and I say that's simple compared to design in the human body. Design in the human body is superior engineering. And then I talk about the fingers. I have designed robots with robot fingers, and it's very humbling because, as I said before, robots are pathetic compared to what the human hand can do. There's one particular movement that robot designers think they will maybe never be able to emulate. It is so complicated, but we take things for granted. We don't realize. And it's this, what's called the writer movement. When you do this movement, it's a very unusual movement because you are flexing and extending different joints at the same time. When you do that, you're just flexing. When you do that, you're extending. But when you do that, you're flexing and extending. When engineers first looked at that, they said, that's impossible. You can't do that. Because if a tendon flexes your fingers, and if a different tendon extends them, then you can't, it's impossible to mix. But we have this incredible design where the tendons weave up and down the joints, and there are seven muscles moving the index finger, seven tendons, and the brain pulls multiple tendons with different tensions, with tendons going around joints, the kind of thing engineers cannot copy. And you get this incredible movement that your brain just thinks, well, that's straightforward. But it's the most incredible movement. You could do 10 PhDs just analysing that movement. Let me give you a quotation. The fingers perform a symphony of astonishing complexity. That was written in 2024, the Translational Research in Anatomy journal. If you read a book on evolution and you read, why do we have fingers and a hand? And it will say the reason we have our hand is to form a fist and punch someone in the face. That's the advantage of our hand. That's what evolution does. Not a very sensible thing to teach children just before they go in the playground to play with their friends. The purpose of your hand is to punch someone in the face. The reality is, if you speak to the top researchers in the field, they will say it's astonishing complexity that we could never even dream of copying. Superior engineering. Then we could come to the knee, the robot knee. Again, it's very simple. It just flexes in one dimension. Our knees have high range of motion in two different directions. If you go skiing, you're knee can also rotate sideways. It actually moves in other ways as well. It's far superior to a robotic knee. And I can then give you another quote. Knees show no wear. If it's a healthy knee, no signs of wear after millions of load cycles. And engineers just find that astonishing, because if you have a replacement knee, it's going to wear out usually within 10 years if you really look after it. Some people, their knees are working after 100 years, after 200 million steps. Again, it's superior engineering, and I wish I could give you an hour lecture on the knee. Then we come to the ear. The ear has incredible sensitivity, and it has a wonderful mechanism inside this, particularly the inner ear. You have those three bones that transmit sound from the air wave to the cochlea, fluid waves. There's an incredible acoustic reflex. If there's a loud noise, tiny muscles in your inner ear, about 2 millimeters long, will tense those little bones and protect your ear from the loud noise. Astonishing engineering. One of the things I explain in this latest book is that there are now scientific papers saying we used to think human ears were not that special because dogs can hear sounds from further away, but we now realize that human hearing is better than all of the animals. It's the most superior hearing because we have this amazing ability to differentiate between very, very similar sounds, and we have to do that for language. To understand language, you've got to have brilliant differentiation of sound, and animals can't do that, but we can. So now they realize our hearing is the absolute best design. So here's a quotation: the human cochlea is of significantly higher resolution of frequency analysis than that found in animals. That's the paper, if you're interested. That is the paper that explains we have actually superior hearing. Again, superior to the most advanced engineering. Then we came to the throat. Remember Abby Hafer, that Oxford graduate? She said our throat is a very bad design because we can choke. Actually, choking is not that common. Obviously, we have to be careful when we eat, not to eat and speak all at the same time. But there are lots of areas we have to be careful. Our eyes are delicate, our ears are delicate. If you actually read what the experts say, they are full of praise for the human voice and the design of the throat. A world-leading expert on the voice, a Japanese surgeon. And if you read a paper that he wrote, he is just gushing with praise for the human voice. And he says this: humans have developed wonderful instruments like the flute. But if you look at the flute, it has lots of different mechanisms. The human voice only has one pair of vocal folds, and yet it is superior to every musical instrument. And musical instruments almost always have lots of different mechanisms for different pitches and to do different things. He said, it's astonishing how you have a superior thing. Sometimes people say, what is the best evidence for creation? And I will often say, the human voice. We are designed to sing praises to God. Evolution can never explain the human voice. If you do look up under evolution, how to explain the human voice, it will say, well, the origin of the human voice is screaming. We had to scream at the lion. The woman had to scream when she was being raped. And if you can sing, well, that's just a coincidence. So we've been evolved to scream. That's all evolution. It's so ridiculous, every aspect of the theory. And our throat is amazingly multi-functioning. We can eat, breathe, talk, sing with one device that reconfigures itself. And I explain in my book, I've worked on reconfiguring rockets that go up in stages. But what we do is nothing compared to the reconfiguration of the throat. 20 muscles operating when you swallow, and they're all in perfect synchronization. It's just a masterpiece of design. Again, superior engineering. Then we come to the nervous system. And with each of these areas, I explain in my book, either I've researched on this area or I've been a practicing engineer in this area. And I do appreciate the wiring in the human body because I wired a lot of Envisat, the largest Earth observation satellite in the world. That's a picture of Envisat. It's bigger than this hallway. The solar array is the size of a badminton court, and I had to wire 400 power lines down from that solar array into the spacecraft. It was over 3 miles of wiring. I had to weave the wires through the spacecraft, sometimes cutting a hole in a beam to get it through. So I can really appreciate the wiring of the human body. But it's very humbling, because the human body has 150,000 kilometers of wiring, and it reaches every cubic millimeter. Now, because I'm an engineer who can begin to appreciate wiring, it makes me feel faint just thinking about that, because in the body you have a main nerve branch that then branches out into smaller nerves that then branches again and branches again and branches again until every cubic millimeter of your body has a nerve connection. If you put a pinprick around your body, you won't find any area that doesn't pick up that pinprick. So those nerves are going, you cannot comprehend. This is why the book of Job says he does things we cannot comprehend. The level of engineering is just astonishing. There's also a picture of the human skull. The human skull has 21 holes in it. When I look at that, I think, yeah, I put holes in a spacecraft to get the wires through. In our skull, we have lots of holes, some for the optic nerves, others for jugular veins, some for the spinal cord. And I explain in my book, that has to be planned from the beginning. You don't evolve a hole and a wire and the eye. That has to be planned, and I know because I've done it. So all through the book, I say, well, I've done this. Richard Dawkins claims it's a bad design. He's never designed anything and hasn't designed so much as a door handle. And if he did, I wouldn't trust it myself. And yet Dawkins is claiming that the human body was not designed. So I'm actually quoting from my forthcoming book, now, Ultimate Engineering. The human nervous system is vastly more sophisticated than any engineering wiring system. Then we come to the brain. I don't know if you've heard this, but they have built a computer with a very similar capability to the human brain, and it's bigger than this room by quite a few times, and it's roughly similar to the power of the human brain, which is the size of a grapefruit. Not only that, but it takes 20 megawatts of power to power that supercomputer. We need 20 watts, 1/1,000th the power requirement of the equivalent supercomputer. That's quite humbling, isn't it? And just to give you one quotation, despite Deep Blue's excellence at chess, it is stupid. These supercomputers are actually stupid when it comes to creativity and really difficult problems. Okay. I even do vaginal birth because I'm interested in biomechanics, and the pelvic floor muscles are the unsung heroes of birth, because they go through the most incredible stretching, and you have this incredible process where you have a hormone relaxing, and it really relaxes the muscles. I've developed artificial muscle in the lab, and so I'm just astounded by what happens during birth. The muscles move by more than any other muscle in the body. I've seen my wife give birth 5 times, and I have to confess that during those 5 births, I was fascinated by the biomechanics. So I've got a chapter on this in my book. The stretch ratio in the pelvic floor muscles can reach an extraordinary 3.6. That's 326%. The stretching is just out of this world. Then the eye. Remember, Richard Dawkins said the eye is the design of a complete idiot. He said that because he thinks the eye is wired backwards. Over 10 years ago, researchers started to realize the eye's not wired backwards. And now it's been absolutely confirmed the eye is not wired backwards. There are fiber optic cables that transmit light through the eye and actually give it signal conditioning. The fact that the retina is the way round it is not a design weakness. It's now discovered. It's a design strength. Richard Dawkins has done what evolutionists often do. They don't understand something like junk DNA, and then they say it's junk, it's badly designed. And then later it's shown it was a reflection of their ignorance, not their understanding, a lack of humility. Even today, the eye is far superior to the best camera, the best camcorder. No camera is as compact and accurate as the human eye. Much higher resolution, 52 megapixel camera, far superior dynamic range, far more adaptable, far more compact. Again, it's superior engineering. Recently, there was a paper and it said the vertebrate eyes come close to perfect. This is an expert in the field. But what is sad is that students are not told these quotations that I'm showing you, the ones that say it's astonishing, it's near perfect, it's superior. Students are not told these quotes. They are quoted what Richard Dawkins thinks, what Nathan Lentz thinks, what Abby Hafer thinks, what the evolutionist thinks. The only way you can explain that is through a spiritual battle. Humanist UK lobbied the government hard. I know, because I've been in Parliament to talk about creation teaching in school. Humanist UK lobby Parliament. Teach them the human body is a bad design. Teach them evolution is a fact. Many of my professorial colleagues, I speak to biologists and engineers, many biologists I speak to, I try and argue with them, and they say, don't argue, because I'm going to agree with you. The evidence for intelligent design is overwhelming, so I'm not going to argue. I can't get into an argument. So I then say, well, why didn't you tell? Why didn't you go public? Well, I don't want to go public, because my career will be affected. The humanists have control over the whole narrative of our education system. The students are not told this kind of quotation. The vertebrate eye comes close to perfect. They're still told it's wired backwards. It's a stupid design. Now, I said I have 10. The reason I said I have 10 examples, because I love 10 examples, but actually I've got an 11th. So one more example. The human heart. This is the last example. If you have a problem with your heart and you have an engineered heart, if you're lucky, it will last 1 year. The human heart can last 100 years. Later I'm going to explain about when things go wrong. But if you have a healthy heart with no genetic disorders, it can easily last 100 years. Vastly superior to an engineered heart. Richard Dawkins claims the human heart is a bad design. Alice Roberts, you know, who works with the BBC a lot, she's been vice president of Humanist UK, and she's always pushing evolution on the BBC. She has written a book saying the human heart is not a good design, it should copy something from a dog heart. Well, that's what Dawkins says, that's what Roberts says. They've never researched the heart. I've been an external examiner at Imperial College. They have the world-leading experts on biomechanics and the heart. And I'm going to show you a quotation from one of the world's foremost experts on the heart. And this is a female professor. This is what she said after decades of research studying the heart. Nothing shows more clearly the perfect engineering of the heart than our own failed attempts to imitate it. So we have millions of people reading Richard Dawkins and Alice Roberts, reading that the heart is a bad design, but the truth is, it is a perfect design. If you speak to someone who actually knows what they're talking about, the human heart. So we have science versus Richard Dawkins. Science versus Alice Roberts. Science versus the evolutionary world view. So now I can tell you my revelation. I've been working on this book for 5 years, and the first year I was very blessed. I won a research fellowship at Cambridge University, Clare Hall College. I was able to look at the very latest research of the human body. There are lots of people before me who've written the human body has superior design. And I thought, well, I'm in this privileged position to say, yes, the human body has a superior design. And then I was thinking about a couple of those quotations. The heart is a perfect design, and the eye is near perfect. And I thought, I've been looking at hundreds of parts of the human body. And then I thought, the design I've been looking at is very different to other designs I've worked on. I have worked on with some of the best designers in the world at NASA, at ESA, at Panasonic, the British Olympic cycling team, the very top designers in the world. And the very top designs at the forefront of engineering. And I thought, there's something different with the designs that I've been looking at. I taught design at Cambridge with the top students in the world, and I've marked thousands of pieces of design work at Cambridge. I never gave 100%. Probably the highest mark I ever gave was 90%. They said I was a hard marker. The top students. And I was thinking, you know, I could give 100% for every single piece of design that I've been looking at in the human body. But then I thought, actually, I haven't been looking at superior design. I've been writing all through my book, Superior Design. I've been looking at perfect design. I've been looking at perfection. My laptop is not perfection. I've been looking at perfection. It was a very emotional feeling, a very humbling feeling. I'm looking at perfection. David, King David, had that view of perfection. And I thought, I have underrated God's design. His designs are perfect. Now, some of you will say, Stuart, if you talked to me, I could have just told you his designs are perfect. That's obvious. Actually, there's a reason. There's a reason I'll come to a bit later why it wasn't quite so obvious to me. Last year, I went to two conferences in the United States, and they were on design, intelligent design. And I gave my talk, and I said, look, colleagues, we've got it wrong. For decades, we've been talking about superior design in the human body and creation. We've got it wrong. It's not superior. It's perfection. And my colleagues agreed, and we all repented together. And then I thought of verses. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I am made with perfection. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. That's an understatement. It was perfection. In Job, stand still and consider the wondrous works of God. Him who is perfect in knowledge. Because God is perfect in knowledge, how could he not design with perfection? Of course he designed the world with perfection. He's not capable of an imperfect judgment. He's not capable of imperfect words. He's not capable of an imperfect design. Everything he designed was perfect. And then I also thought of the hymn. This was embarrassing. Isaac Watts, a hymn I sung hundreds of times. I sing the almighty power of God. There's not a flower or plant below, but makes thy glories known. Basically, what he's saying is, every plant and flower God made is perfect. And so he's one of those people who would say, that was blinding the obvious, Stuart. You should have spoken to me. So this was my book originally, so I had to cross that out. And it's now called Ultimate Engineering. And throughout the book, I kind of rewrote it. Then I had to write, everything is at the limit of what is physically possible. It's the perfect design, the ultimate that is possible. Everything you look, analyze in the human body, it is perfection of design. Now, some of you will say, hang on a minute, there's an objection here. Disease, genetic faults, people born blind. Can you just explain that? Well, I just run through the theory. There are three levels of design. Evolution predicts bad design, just good enough design. That's why Lentz, Dawkins are claiming the human body is badly designed, because they're hoping it's badly designed, because that's what evolution predicts. They're talking about the prediction and the hope, not the reality. There's human intelligence that can produce advanced design, and then there's divine intelligence, ultimate design. In my book, I have a diagram, for those of you who like this in a diagram. At the beginning, you have the creation of man, ultimate engineering, but we live in a fallen world, so we now have genetic decay, devolution. But if you put genetic decay to one side, obviously people can be born blind due to a genetic fault, but if you put those kind of faults to one side, and actually most of the time you can do that, then you can see what is ultimate engineering if you put genetic decay to one side. According to evolution, everything's progressing from the bottom, even though there's not a shred of evidence for that. And things are getting better, but never as good as human technology. But obviously, the human body is far superior than human technology. So here is the objection that people will make. They'll say, well, how about disease and decay? Disease is not a design fault. It's something that exists in a fallen world. Just the fact that we get diseases is not a... We are actually very well designed to cope with diseases. And genetic decay is not a design fault. You could have an Aston Martin, it's going to get rusty. That's not a design fault. It's a reality of the world that the car lives in. And if you have a factory error due to some misinformation, that's not a design fault, as the designer originally designed that car. And so with the human body, it was perfectly designed from the beginning. Adam and Eve had that perfect body, and we still have remnants of that perfection if you put to one side the decay that has happened. So yes, we can observe perfection of design, and we need that vision of God's perfection, to know that his way is perfect, a perfect plan for our life. That's what gives us confidence. And yeah, you can see perfection in creation. This is why in Psalm 8, the psalmist David says, you have set your glory above the heavens. The psalmist could see perfection in the design of the stars. Actually, I had a second revelation, just two revelations. And this one was really interesting. So the first one was ultimate engineering. The next one is ultimate diversity. And the conferences I went to in the States, they liked this one as well. Because what does a good designer do? What does a perfect designer do? Well, I know from personal experience, a good designer will explore the design space. I really enjoyed helping to design the fastest bike in the world for the British Olympic cycling team. I enjoyed helping to design Envisat, the largest Earth observation satellite in the world. Designers like to explore the design space. When I look at the whole of creation, I suddenly realized, of course, God has explored the design space with perfection. I looked at the highest flying creatures, the deepest fish, the fastest fish, the fastest birds. I looked at the largest creatures, and in every case, God had gone to the ultimate limit. You could never explain it by evolution, but it is exactly what you'd expect from God. Some people say, why would God create dinosaurs? What was the point of creating dinosaurs? Well, in my book, I said God had to create dinosaurs because he had to demonstrate his perfection. He had to demonstrate, I can make things at the biggest size. Dinosaurs, the biggest dinosaurs, are as big as what is physically possible. Blue whales are as the biggest physical possible creature that can live in the seas. They're limited by the size of the heart. You look at the biggest flying creatures, they are the biggest that is possible. But in my book I explain, the fastest, the biggest, the most remote, the most extreme, the hottest, the coldest, God has explored because he's perfect. Why did God create a universe with billions of galaxies, each one with billions of stars? Because he's perfect. And with perfection, he's explored every possibility of every design of galaxy, every color, every texture, every size, because he's perfect. He's explored the design space with perfection. And then, of course, what does it say in Job chapter 9? He does wonders without number. Particularly with reference to the stars. And Job wrote that before we knew the universe was vast. It's a remarkable verse that shows the truth of the Bible. But it actually ties in with God's perfection of creation and design. Just to share very briefly, if you're interested, one of the strongest arguments, supposedly, for evolution is Darwin's homology argument. Darwin said, if you look at the layout of the arm of a human, a whale, a bird wing, a whale flipper, a frog leg, they all have three joints, and that can only be due to evolution. His big assumption was that the vertebrate layout was not optimal for all of those creatures. I wrote a huge paper, 15,000 words, 50 diagrams, and in the paper I said Darwin was wrong, completely wrong. He assumed the vertebrate limb was not the best design for every animal. In my paper I will show it is the best design. Even for the whale flipper, the whale needs a wrist and fingers to move the flipper. And I sent it to the Institute of Physics, and even the title is in defiance of Darwin, Universal Optimal Design in the Vertebrate Limb Pattern. And I have to confess, I was astonished when they published this. And I said, this refutes the homology argument, which is the whole basis of the theory of evolution taught around the world. And I had this kind of diagram showing that the whale does need to move its fingers. Whales need fingers. One of the biggest arguments of evolution is that whales don't need fingers and muscles in fingers. And in my paper, I proved that whales do need their fingers and a wrist for the hydrodynamic efficiency. If you're interested, you can look in the paper. That's been one of the most encouraging things recently. Some of you might have seen this before, but I had one run-in with Dawkins. He said, maybe Burgess and McIntosh are right and all the rest of us are wrong. A little bit of sarcasm there. Not just slightly wrong, but catastrophically, appallingly, devastatingly wrong if Burgess is correct. If Burgess and McIntosh are right, the scientific establishment has fallen. Well, I kind of agree with Dawkins, but it's not the scientific establishment that has fallen. It's the false science of evolution that has fallen. I don't know if I shared this before, but one of my biggest encouragements was I had a letter from Prince Charles, and he said, I like your book, Hallmarks of Design. I'm going to quote from it in the Reith lectures to 90 million people. And he did. And he said, why should modern science rule out special creation? which was, I didn't tell him to quote that, but that was just the most fantastic quote. He had a bit of a different agenda. He thought, maybe correctly, if people reject special creation, they won't look after planet Earth. That was his argument. But it was a fantastic quotation because that's what it comes down to, different world views. If you rule out creation, then you have to believe in the most stupid theory of evolution if you've ruled out special creation. I said to my friend, I was very brave of him to quote that, and it did create a stir in the national press. But my friend said it wasn't brave at all. He cannot be sacked or demoted. So my book, Ultimate Engineering, is due out on the 12th of February. That is 17 days and 4.5 hours time after 5 years of work and 2 revelations. It's due out on the 12th of February because that is Darwin's birthday. So we're trying to annoy as many evolutionists as possible. And later in February, I'll be travelling to California and Texas to give some talks. I have to make one apology about the book. It's primarily for an American audience, so I was not allowed to have analogies with cricket. It had to be baseball. So there's a lot of Americanisms in there. It seems to be sold by Waterstones, Amazon, etc. A few days ago, it was £18, but it seems to have gone up to £21. So check the prices carefully, and I apologise, it's quite expensive. These are two books that I think are quite good for evangelism. Coffee Table Books on the left, I wrote that with Andy McIntosh, a very good friend. On the right, I wrote that with my daughter, Tabitha. Both are meant to be coffee table books, evangelistic books. If you know someone who's keen on sport, it's a very good gift. Has gospel testimonies in the back of the book, a Christian view of sport, but it's not heavy, but not heavy going. But in conclusion, before question time, just to mention a couple of verses, Psalm 111, verse 2, the works of the Lord are great, studied by all who have pleasure in them. It's important to have a high view, not just of God's word, but a high view of all of God's works, his works in creation, his works in judgment, in providence, and to have that high view of God's perfect way. His way is perfect and makes my way perfect. That's how we have confidence in God, to have that vision of his perfection. I hope that's an encouragement to you all. Thank you.